Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right. For just $20, we'd say your name here and say something nice about you, whether it be in our homes, in a Super 8 in DeKalb, Illinois, or just anywhere where a pickup podcast happens, we would say it. Or you can contribute to our legal fund at GoFundMe.com/NerdandTie.
This time on Nerd and Tie, we were literally just at KuroshiCon. Cherry City Comic Con canceled and uncanceled themselves, changed the channel, got worse, and our big topic tonight is we let Nick talk about King Arthur. Those, the mailbag, and more on this episode of Nerd and Tie.
And hopefully my clicking the input button there to turn our volume up wasn't too loud, and hopefully you all didn't just turn your speakers up loud to hear us.
Sorry.
That is my fault. I didn't turn the input back up to where it normally is. Oh, God, the song's still playing. Again, introduce us.
What? Oh, right. I'm your host, Gen Prok, and with me are my other hosts, Trey Darn.
Hello!
And Nick Izumi.
Can I...
And we're in a hotel room in DeKalb, Illinois.
Hell yeah, we are.
With just the digital recorder, so pardon our sound quality, and sorry the intro of the show was so quiet. I'll try to fix it in post, but I might not, because I'm lazy. So, the rest of your episode, though, will be at this volume. So enjoy! Hope we didn't blow out your speakers.
Yeah, do not adjust your settings.
Why are we in DeKalb, Illinois?
Because we were just at a convention.
Oh my god.
Yeah, we were all hanging out at KuroshiCon.
KuroshiCon? I just thought it sounded fun to say.
Yeah, Kuroshi.
Kuroshi has kind of become this recurring thing for us. Because it's this fun little anime con in Northern Illinois.
Yeah, Northern Illinois University. The Holmes Student Center.
I was really disappointed that the Holmes Student Center was not named after Illinois resident and America's first serial killer, H.H. Holmes. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit disappointed by that.
I read a really good book about that.
Are you disappointed that
Was it Devil in the White City?
It was! That's a super good book.
Are you bothered that the vendor room wasn't a death hotel? Are you bothered that we're not in it? Oh god, I hope this isn't a death hotel.
I really hope this is.
We're all sleeping in this hotel tonight. God damn it, why would you say that while we're in a hotel? We're in a room at a Super 8. We're in a...
A Super 8.
It's a Super 8. We sleep in the city tonight. Hashtag bread life.
Oh my god.
Cthulhu was a patsy. Run through all
this
of them.
Means nothing to anyone. So
the father, the son, and the sister location.
Okay, so Kuroshi is a delightful little one day con that we all like to come and sell at. And just hang out.
Like to lose money at. It's an excuse to hang out with people and go to the Panera.
It's one of those conventions where, like, you
say words that Arkhamize can't.
Because, like, everybody has it where you haven't been to a convention in such a long time, you start getting cabin fever for conventions. And so, like, you just get excited for whatever convention is next. Yeah. Like, even if it's, like, a dinky, teeny one that, like, you have to drive through a storm to get to. Like,
which actually might have helped out our, all of our respective, like, vending endeavors, because judging by how many empty tables there were, I'm pretty sure quite a few people canceled.
Yeah, but I think a few attendees canceled. Like, my sales were down this year from last year, and I think there were fewer people there, but...
Dang you, evil inn!
But it was fun.
Mine were about the same, I think. But yeah.
I checked my tracking from last year, and I don't know. But it was fun. It was fun, and I made my table back.
It's always a good...
It's a really cheap table, but I made it back.
Well, it's a good time. You meet some really excited people. Even, honestly, some of the cosplay this year was even pretty good.
Impressed. There was some solid cosplay. And
yeah.
I wore a wig for 5 seconds before I started sweating too much, and I took it off. And then, oh, it's, I don't know, KuroshiCon is just a lot of fun. It's, I love these little, I love these tiny, like, I wish they would extend to 2 days. Like, I think it would be a little bit better as a 2 day event. Like, I'd like, cause part of me, like, when we drove by, like, the turnoff, on the way back from dinner to the hotels, we drove past the turnoff for the hotels, like, part of my brain was like, oh, and more, no, the con's over.
Yeah, it's, the...
Well, it's hard cause, they have classes in that area on Friday, and the center, I believe, like, that part of the center that the vendor room is in isn't even, like, available on Sunday. It's not even open.
Really?
Yeah.
That's... I mean, they've held... I'm not sure, because they held the event on Sunday 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, because I remember... that changed, but yeah, it was...
Yeah, I couldn't go because I had an independent show.
And
that's always on a Sunday.
I did go because it was the day after my wedding, and it just seemed like a fun getaway because I was broke.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that year I was down at HoosierCon, the independent show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a weekend. A lot of traveling. But it's, yeah, no, that's, yeah, it's surprising.
Kuroshi is always fun. Those would honestly be my two biggest changes to what they do now is, yeah, I would like to see them as a 2 day event, and two, I honestly think the number of vendors and artists they had this year was a good number, because I know it's
I thought it was too much. I always think it's too much.
It was less than last year, which makes it better than...
Well, that's true.
And then the year before was... And then last year, I think, was also an improvement over the year before. You can't have tons of artists and tons of vendors at a con with this kind of attendance. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
No one makes their money back, and it's a waste of time for everybody.
Yeah.
I just noticed that Messenger's still using my old icon. In the corner. That's weird. Anyways, that's me looking at my iPad.
I mean, one of the things, like, you have to learn as an artist affiliate head is, like, how many, like, the ratio you need of artists and vendors to attendees. And you need to, like, you know, make your room, like, make your artist alley as big or small as you need it.
Yeah,
how
it's...
How many people you get.
Most artists would rather get turned away than lose money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very
it's
true.
So, I don't know, it's hard. Like, the only vendor we spent money with last year wasn't here this year. So, like, I don't know if people didn't apply or if they didn't get accepted this time or what. Like, because, but whatever. It is what it is. That's the magic. That's the magic of Kuroshi lies in your heart.
Well, and at least, like, Kuroshi, like, actually happened and didn't cancel themselves.
Well,
and then uncancel themselves?
Is that a segue?
Yeah, I'm getting better at those.
Who would do such a thing?
That would be Cherry City Comic Con, since I have the story up.
Yeah.
And I'm getting the story up.
You know things about it.
And I wrote the story. So Cherry City Comic Con is it's based in Salem, Oregon, I want to say, because the news story will not open on my iPad, no matter how many times I click on it. So Cherry City Comic Con is, an annual convention, in Salem, Oregon, and the weirdest thing happened this week. So, on April 9th, the Cherry City Comic Con's official Facebook page, nothing was announced on their website, nothing was announced in text on the internet, anywhere, they posted a short Facebook video saying the con runner posted a video saying the show was canceled. And he talked about, you know, maybe refunding some people, but lots of people, you know, hadn't gotten paid, had already been paid, so they might not have stuff or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And so, which was really weird, because they made this cancellation announcement, but tickets are still available for sale. Nothing in text. And honestly, you know, people who don't like the Facebook page wouldn't have seen that show up in their feed, which is, by the way, most of the attendees. And that's why we covered it. I mean, normally, you know, a con doesn't happen, it's not a big deal, but because this was so poorly publicized, like, I needed to write a story about it, because there would be no record, like, people would literally, I was expecting people to show up on the day and not find a convention. So the weird thing is that, John Roach, then the guy in charge of Cherry City Comic Con, like the next day, several hours after our story went up, announced that the convention was no longer canceled. They uncanceled the con. Now, these were both done as Facebook videos and nothing was written down. So if you cancel and uncancel a convention and nobody hears that it happened, did anything really happen?
I have so many questions and no good answers.
But here's the thing, like, it happened, like, there are, like, we were tipped off by an artist who's slated to vend there, and, like, he had canceled his hotel room and flights between, you know, the two announcements, and so I know that he was trying to decide whether or not he should go still, but, like, what the heck? So Cherry City Comic Con, we've talked about on the podcast before a long time ago. But, so they're no stranger to controversy, but that didn't have, that old, like, what happened years ago, back in 2014 has nothing to do with current management. John Roach took over in 2015. There was a controversy back in 2014 when Mark Martin, the guy who used to run it, openly mocked a congoer on social media who was concerned about harassment. That guy doesn't run, Mark Martin doesn't have anything to do with the convention. All this stuff was, John Roach, who effectively, Mark Martin canceled the convention at one point a few months beforehand, and that's when John Roach took over the show and brought it back. And like this is like maybe a year into the con's running that he bought it back, that he bought it from them, I should say. But like so, there were no public signs of anything going weird. That's the thing. Like I mean, maybe like I'm not saying there weren't money issues or that stuff wasn't happening. But, like, there was no public sign that something was going on. Mm. And so, like, for this came out of the blue. And again, it was on a Facebook video. Like, nobody, like, you couldn't have searched for it. There wasn't, like, an official, like, announcement or reason posted. It's just right out there on the internet.
This sounds magical.
This is...
I like their almost copyright... Infringement-tastic logo.
Oh, yeah. Seriously. Yeah, their Captain America shield with the five cherries. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sure.
So I also have this terrible thing where I'm trying to write about it, where I know Cherry City Comic Con and Rose City Comic Con are totally different things, even though they're both in Oregon. And they take place in cities where there's an East Coast equivalent. but, like, I know they're separate things, but I keep mistyping. Like, I literally, like, the article went live originally with one of the times I mistyped it as Rose City Comic Con and got corrected. Like, it was just, oh god, like, but I did that so many times while writing the article. I kept having to delete it, and I don't know what it is with my brain that it, like, it wants to, like, is it just the color red? Like, is that...
I got nothing.
It's the state of Oregon. There's something wrong. State of Oregon. 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 You ever just say a state name and go, man, that's messed up?
All the time.
Speaking of messed up.
We need to go to the dark place now.
Alright, so we are 13 minutes into this episode. This is where we're going to do a content warning. The following story is going to deal with content warning for sexual assault, grooming, and a lot of gross stuff. If you check the episode description, I'm going to put in the time code that you can skip to. If you want to get to our main topic, which is going to be super fun.
Yeah, the main topic is going to be lighthearted.
The main
fun,
topic
guys,
is going to be super fun, we promise. But this is a big story, isn't it, Gen?
It's something that needs to be said, unfortunately.
So if you can't, if you have any triggers with sexual assault or conversations about grooming and all that stuff, skip to the time code listed in the description. Okay?
We'll see you there.
Yeah. Again, what happened?
So, in the change of channel stuff.
Yeah, if you remember last episode, we talked about the change the channel controversy surrounding Channel Awesome.
The Channel Awesome crew decided to post a second non-apology.
Yeah. One of the allegations against Channel Awesome was that an unnamed producer was grooming young women and had sexually assaulted at least two. Management at Channel Awesome allegedly knew and did nothing. What's come out since, and has been confirmed by the victims, is that the unnamed producer was Jew Wario.
Yeah, the late Justin Carmichael.
I want to point something out before we get into this, just how much of a cluster frack.
This is shocking to a lot of us to learn.
Because, everything was handled in the worst way possible, because Channel Awesome's non-apology that they did, the entire reason that Justin Carmichael's identity was revealed, the entire reason was that the folks at Channel Awesome decided to post this rebuttal, and they do call the people who wrote the Change the Channel petition, they call them liars.
Yeah.
But then one of their points is one where they straight up say, oh yeah, this sexual assault and grooming totally happened, but we dealt with it faster than they said we did. Look at these chat logs. And they just barely, they did the least amount of effort to scratch out a name, but yeah, put the dates on it, so literally everyone figured out who they were talking about immediately.
Yeah, the exit of Justin Carmichael from Channel Awesome. And it was also confirmed by one of the victims, not the Jane Doe who wrote in the Change the Channel document, but by another woman who was a victim.
And, yeah.
It was confirmed by Holly, who used to be head of HR for Channel Awesome, as a legitimate victim.
From what I understand, Iron Liz has come out with some information on it, too.
Okay, so. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
I'll
link it to you later.
So, I had hoped, I wanted to talk more about Change the Channel this episode, because that response was, the worst response ever to a controversy.
Well, yeah, because it's rhetoric. They immediately start off with, these people are liars, and we're going to clear the air, don't worry.
Yeah, but they say that, and then continue to reinforce the points made by people in the document, missing the points on several of them. Weirdly focus on Lindsay Ellis, and so there's so much fun, weird, crazy stuff to talk about with that response that I wish that we could have just focused on, because let's just say you should read their response and then have a good laugh, because it is so inept. If you thought the non-apology was the worst way to respond to the controversy,
we're sorry you feel that way.
This was worse. This was a it was a, yeah, well, I dug myself in this hole. I'm going to start pulling the dirt down on top of me now. It did nothing but really kind of prove the point, when literally all they had to do was say, yeah, we haven't always been perfect. We fucked up some in the past, and we're going to do better going forward. Literally, they could have just done that and,
it talks out of both sides of its mouth, though, because, the opening sentence, they call the people making the allegations liars. And then later, they're like, we know we're not perfect.
Right, no, it's like they, literally, all you have to do is say that, you don't even have to admit where you exactly screwed up. You can say, yeah, we've made plenty of mistakes. We're a young company. We don't know, I wouldn't have believed it, but someone would have believed it. Many, they would have retained more view. There are enough people who would have believed it to, stem the bleeding of their subscriber numbers. But no, we have to talk about this instead, because Justin Carmichael, first off, a friend of the show, Sean Orange, Sean Course of Famicom Dojo, collaborated with Justin, there's...
I had two other friends who were, who I've worked with on YouTube who collaborated with Justin, because he was apparently very welcoming to younger new YouTubers, which feels really uncomfortable to say.
Right now Sean, if you had, asked him a week ago, and literally, we've excised a paragraph from Sean's letter in the mailbag because of it, would have said that Jew Wario, Justin Carmichael, was an upstanding guy. And literally, those are words that he used, but he was unaware, of course,
that we did an obituary for Carmichael on our show, And I was I was on the verge of tears during it.
Yeah, we did. Oh, wow, I forgot about that. Like, the whole internet, the whole geek internet mourned for this guy. Mm. And it's, like, based on the timing of him, his exit from Channel Awesome and the suicide, there's, oh, God.
Yeah, there's...
Like, I mean, I think we mentioned Justin Carmichael last episode when we were talking about Change the Channel.
Yeah, I don't remember in what capacity, but...
But it's it seems like, from what we've been able to find, like, no one who worked with him knew about the stuff that was happening, except for apparently Channel Awesome leadership, and then, who then cravenly exploited his death, knowing that this had happened.
Uh-huh.
Like... Wow. Like, that is, that somehow makes it, like, 10 times worse. The, like, and they had to know that it was possible this would come out. I mean, frankly, it only came out because they leaked it.
Yeah, which is, again, I want to emphasize for those who were, because, I mean, we really jumped on this train and might not have gone into what, these full allegations involve sexually grooming young women, including other producers on the site. They involve grooming fangirls, like using his internet personality and fame, you know, to take advantage of people. It's awful.
Yeah.
And I feel gross talking about this, because before we recorded this.
Yeah.
The topic did get brought up about, like, where do you draw the line between speaking ill of the dead and, you know, setting the record straight on something like this?
Yeah.
And it's a lot, man.
It's a heck of a lot.
I'm really sorry. I'm really shook right now. This is...
Right.
The internet community has been so... It's impossible to downplay how important Channel Awesome was in the history of YouTube video making.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
Yeah.
And the fact that everyone, no matter who it was, like, who was, like, involved with Channel Awesome in any way, even, like, peripherally... While Justin was involved, they always spoke so highly of him.
Yeah, no,
so it's really upsetting.
It's really upsetting. Like, there are so many people who are just like, this is jaw dropping, and obviously this is terrible. But I think it's important that we should emphasize people. Like, I can't believe I'm going to have to say this, but it's important that people leave Justin's widow alone.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is.
And it's not worth. Please don't go after the victims and trying to find out. Don't try to find out who they are. They didn't want this to come out themselves because they don't want to be viewed that way.
The person who wrote the thing in the Change the Channel, the original Not So Awesome document.
Yeah.
There's a reason that they wanted their name omitted.
Yeah.
And why they made their abuser's name omitted. It's not your job to tell a victim how to seek justice. It's not.
Yeah. It's, and, like, I don't, but more importantly, this is not an active danger in the community. I hate to, God, I feel gross saying that, but, like, God, this is really messed up, and I would like to stop talking about it. Are you guys okay if we stop talking about this?
I think that's as good as we're gonna get.
Alright, so I'm gonna right now write down the time code of 25 minutes. Oh, 25 minutes. And now, folks, it's time. And I swear to God, I'm not delaying so we can get to exactly 25 minutes. Except I totally am. And now it's time to remove the awfulness and get to our big topic. As we let Nick...
talk.
Again, what are we going to let Nick do?
Talk about King Arthur.
Well, yeah. I realize that with the new format, she has to say it, but I was always the one who yelled that out.
It's fine.
During stories. We're adjusting.
We got, so this generalized topic came up through just how often, this comes up in conversations for me right now, because I don't actually entirely know what got me on this kick.
Nick finds any conversation an excuse to turn it into a conversation about King Arthur lately.
This is true. Because about a few months back, I got really fixated on the lore again.
And we were talking about the original topic we were thinking, considering for this episode, was going to be talking about, like, the best adaptations.
The best version of the same story.
Yeah. And you talked about King Arthur in front of us for, like, 10 minutes straight.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, by God, we're going to talk about King Arthur. Because King Arthur, man.
The thing, though, so I got on this Arthurian kick. I've been on it really since the late part of last year, and I've been doing all the research I can. And I decided if I'm going to really learn about this, there's only one proper way to do it.
Yeah, what?
I went back to the beginning of the mythology.
Of course you did.
So,
quick skimming of Mists of Avalon for Nick. A binge watch of Merlin.
The weird thing about the Arthur legend.
Both the Samuel one and the... Sorry.
But yeah, exactly. Colin Morgan, Sam Neill, I love them both. They are wonderful. The weird thing about the Arthur myth, though, is that in so many ways, it predates how fandom and, like, the way we build up canon around fictional characters. Like, it's almost the ground, all the groundwork for how we've done fandom build-up.
Well, it's the way stories have always been told, but it's the most well-documented.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most well-documented early records of effectively the entire way that the fanfic community works.
It really is, and some people are going to scoff at the fact that we just called it fanfic, but guess what? Most of the Arthurian legend is fanfic.
Yeah, totes.
Now, King Arthur was a folk hero of, like, Wales and Britain, like, early British societies, and the earliest written record of King Arthur says two things about him. Two. That, one, he led the Britons to victory against the Saxons at the Battle of Badon Hill, possibly while carrying some relic of the Lord Jesus Christ on his back, something to that effect. And two, that at the Battle of Camlann, he and Medrot, later pronounced Mordred, fell, and there was a plague in Ireland.
So is this meant to be is this a real history with any?
This was.
Was the, there a guy or
the,
was
the
this
Annals
just made
of Wales up? Is like an like the old collected Welsh like what they claimed was history, but the problem with early historians is that they were just kind of making stuff up sometimes and incorporating folk legends.
Because I just wanted to see, like, because, like, there's a, like, because there's two ways to look at it, like, because if there really were just a couple of minor historical things and it's just literally there were two guys with these names who might have fought in some fight sometime, it's like if we based everything we knew about One Direction from Harry Styles, Zane, /Vic.
Basically, yeah. That's
right,
like,
right,
like,
that's...
Like, and I want to emphasize...
Like, there were two guys with those names, but nothing you wrote down happened.
Yeah, the whole thing, the Mordred thing, the Arthur and Mordred, yeah, they're mentioned, but it doesn't say who they were fighting, were they fighting each other, were they related, they just die.
Yeah.
Two
dudes are dead. One of them had a name and the other one had another name that we'll mispronounce forever.
Side note, there's more historical evidence for a Merlin than there is for Arthur.
Of course there is.
That's
because Merlin is real.
Amorous Ambrosius, bro. Where the actual Arthur story got fleshed out was by one of my favorite people.
Okay.
Geoffrey of Monmouth.
Yeah, now, good old Geoffrey Monmouth.
Geoffrey of Monmouth thought himself a historian, was
Geoffrey Monmon.
Geoffrey Monmon. He really thought he was a historian. And the thing is, if there were, like, if there were
it's
holes...
It's like if I really thought I was a sea captain.
If there
I
were,
might know what a boat looks like.
If there were holes in, like, his history, he just kind of made stuff up and threw it in there. So, in Jeffrey's version, we got Merlin, who has almost nothing to do with the story.
Who was a pre-existing legendary figure that was separate from the Arthur mythos.
Mm-hmm. Also, Jeff's favorite character.
Yeah, so he, it's like he, okay, so these two guys. What if Knight Rider showed up?
Yeah, like, what if secretly Knight Rider was part of their origin? Because Merlin's only...
No one knows exactly what David Hasselhoff was doing then.
Because Merlin doesn't...
Maybe he was there.
He doesn't directly interact with Arthur initially. He just helps Uther Pendragon, a different king, have not-so-consensual intercourse with a lady, which produces Arthur.
That's what you do when you're a creepy wizard. Fuck.
Merlin's a very ambivalent figure early on.
Well, he ages backwards.
That came later. That's a 20th century
thing. I'm just kidding. I'm just making jokes.
That's
I'm making jokes.
So
he's the original Benjamin Button?
Sort of. So Jeff did this whole... Jeff is where we get, like, the story of Arthur was
the... 5-year-old cousin is Merlin. Nephew. Nephew. He's my nephew. My cousin is in grade school.
So you got Arthur, he, like, inherits the throne, defeats the Saxons, becomes the greatest king ever, brings together the medieval Avengers. And that's the thing. You had these knights that, you start having these stories of Arthur gathering all these great heroes, and a lot of these great heroes were other characters that existed in Welsh folklore.
Like Gawain.
Like Gawain, who was the best knight ever for a while.
Who fought the Green Knight, and not the Green Knight, as you corrected me. In a random
not the Green Man, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Green Knight, Green Man.
They're,
who's the Green Knight?
The Green Knight was who he fought. The Green
right.
Man is a...
Well, I know who the Green Man is.
The Green Knight was...
As a neo-pagan, I know who the Green Man is.
The Green Knight, actually, there's a lot of debate over... That he might actually be the Green Man, but we're not clear on that. J.R.R. Tolkien didn't think it was the Green Man, but that's...
J.R.R. Tolkien also made the Jewish people dwarves.
So, yeah, I guess, but...
Racism, man.
Lots of racism there. But, you know, this is where we get... This is where
like
we get
Ferengi.
Arthur building his...
Ferengi are racist.
There aren't any Ferengi yet.
But,
we'll get there.
But both. I mean, like, if you think about it, this is just a side note that saying the sentence, Ferengi are racist, is both applies to the concept of Ferengi and the attitude of Ferengi.
The... Okay.
That's a button.
But Jeff's version of the story, you have Arthur victorious, he gets together the medieval Avengers. This is something that's kind of strictly in Geoffrey of Monmouth's version. A lot of people didn't run with this part. He tries to invade Rome.
Of course.
Because of course you would. And while he was in Europe, his nephew, Mordred, remember him from earlier?
Oh, he's his nephew now.
Uh-huh. Mordred, who was just some other guy, seduces... Also, Gawain's younger brother. Yeah. Mordred seduces Guinevere.
Gawain is also the nephew of Arthur?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Okay, yeah.
That's not often reused in stories.
Yes, well, that's where it gets interesting, because Arthur's half-sister Morgos was the daughter of Uther's wife and her initial husband before Uther... took her.
Okay.
Wait,
if that's Morgause, then who's Morgana?
We'll get there.
Well, so did Merlin flip those?
We'll get there.
Okay.
This
is the BBC search.
Morgause was...
I thought it was pronounced Morgaze.
I'm not entirely great on this pronunciation.
Okay, it's... Okay, so I'll say that the BBC series...
Says
Morgause,
but...
Said Morgaze.
Do they? Well, anyway, the character...
Merlin fans, write to us at nerdandtie.com/contact and please explain to us how to pronounce it in text somehow. No, call 414-375-0480 and just pronounce the word for us.
Here's the thing, and you see, we're already getting to the stuff. The mythology has changed so many times. Some characters get really screwed over. Morgause is one of the worst examples of this because in later versions, she gets turned... her part changes. Like, sometimes she is plots against Arthur because his dad, assaulted her mom. Sometimes she and Morgana are the same person.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
in some stories, they just straight up are fused and become the same person. But in Jeff's version, Morgos was Arthur's beloved sister, and his general Lot, he wanted to marry his beloved sister, and
royalty, what do you expect?
Well, yeah. And his sister gave birth to Gawain, the best knight, and Mordred, the worst knight.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know, it's like I knew about Mordred, but I was unaware that Gawain was incorporated into the lineal line there. Because I always thought of him as a separate, it was due to his, position in Welsh folklore.
And even Gawain is a mixture of some other characters, like Hugh Cullen from Ireland and some other stuff. But, so you had this family tree, and it is, in this version, this is the first time we meet Guinevere, but it's also the first time that we have Guinevere's infidelity. But there's no Lancelot. Lancelot wasn't in the original story. She gets seduced by Mordred. And and Geoffrey implies that it's consensual. Like, she's totally on board with him. And then when Arthur hears about this, he heads back to Britain. There's a big throwdown. They kill each other. That was that. And Arthur is mortally wounded and taken to the mystical Isle of Avalon. That'll come up a lot later.
Yeah. Also known as the Isle of Man. Isle of Man's a real place. I was just picking a random island that was near stuff.
It seems, the way that it's portrayed in a lot of the early stuff, it's pretty clearly the land of the Fae.
But it's
the Christianization of the mythology was already changing stuff so that it's...
Yeah. So what you're saying is that the Isle of Man is the land of the Fae.
Maybe? I don't know. Probably.
Could be.
I don't know any fae, so I don't know.
If you live on the Isle of Man, if you live in the Isle of Man, or you know any fairy folk, please write to us at nerdandtie.com/contact, or call us at 414-375-0480, and if you are an actual fairy, please don't call us. We don't want to talk to you. We like having our names.
I have cold iron to keep you away.
I have intricate spells protecting my abode. My warding is strong and not to be trifled with.
So now that the groundwork was laid, this is where fanfic.
You can't stop the train.
You can't stop this train.
No.
Because this is where it got really fanficky. So now that we had the basic story laid out, everyone wanted in on this. So everyone had an OC. Suddenly, all these new knights started showing up in the stories.
Oh, yeah, well, you heard that knight, but you hear about my favorite knight. You never heard of him. He's Sir Leon. He's an ascended extra from Merlin, and he's the best.
But that's where they all came from.
He's no less legitimate. Sir Leon from Merlin is no less legitimate than, and if you tell me that
Percival
Sir Leon
or...
is King Leon Madrid or whatever, blah, 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 no, he's not. He's not. He is not a king, therefore, he is just, Sir Leon is Sir freaking Leon, and let him be Sir Leon, he's the best.
But yeah, that's what it was. You had Percival and the Grail, you had, of course, everyone's favorite, Lancelot du Lac, and the good people at Overly Sarcastic Productions described Lancelot as someone's Inuyasha OC that got thrown into the Arthur myth, and I totally see it.
Well, didn't Lancelot like pre-exist, like have his own legends and stuff like that? That's
nope.
Completely separate.
No, or? he was made up specifically to get shoehorned into the Arthur legend.
Really?
By a guy named Chrétien de Troyes. Chrétien was, he wrote for a young lady who wanted stories, and she was really into this thing called courtly love.
Not to be confused with Courtney Love, who,
is terrible. I mean...
I don't know, like, I like Doll Parts as a song, like...
Fair.
It's, Hole put out some good stuff. I mean, I'm not saying you should ever spend time with Courtney Love, but...
Courtney Love is where it gets weird and fun, though.
That's people say that about Courtney Love, too.
So the idea of courtly love is that a knight should find a lady to devote himself to completely, even if he can't have her. And this is where Lancelot comes in. His love and lust over Guinevere, his constant devotion to her in Chrétien stories made him more noble.
Oh, of course.
And that one time that they totally did it, that was super noble because they loved each other above all else, but they still kept up the guise and kept things in order. And somehow
let's not even get into the Lady of Shalott.
There's a lot of fun. So, obviously, so Lancelot was a beloved character by some people and not by other people.
Yeah.
That's...
Of course. So some guys, Inuyasha OC, suddenly banged Arthur's wife.
Yeah.
The character, and Guinevere has the least consistent, like, you know more about this than I do, but I could, you know, from all the different versions I've seen, Guinevere has the least consistent portrayal against
all media.
Poor
Gwen is all over the place. She's unfaithful in Geoffrey's version. She's super jealous in Breton mythology.
She's Blue Keira Knightley in First Knight.
You mean in King Arthur?
King Arthur. Yeah. Yes. First Knight's different.
I would rather watch King Arthur 2004 than First Knight ever again.
I remember First Knight. Was Sean Connery in First
Knight?
I meant to say King Arthur, but the problem is that my brain hears that and it gets confused. Oh, Excalibur's fun. That's got Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, Excalibur. Even the sword is weird. That wasn't in the early stories.
Yeah.
And
they're two swords.
Yes and no. That's
right.
That's complicated.
That's the fun.
Because that's the thing. Caliburn, Geoffrey does mention a sword named Caliburn, but it doesn't sound like the sword is magic so much as that Arthur prays enough that Jesus and Mary, this is in Geoffrey of Monmouth, that Jesus and the Virgin Mary...
you can tell me lots of shit and said it was in Geoffrey of Monmouth and I'd believe you at this
give
point.
Give him the ability to kill 300 dudes in one day. This is actually in... But Caliburn is probably a Latinization of the Welsh word for just sword. And then when you Frenchify Caliburn, Caliburn becomes Excalibur.
Oh my god.
Ah, uh-huh.
That makes Sonic and the Black Knight make a little bit more sense.
Just...
What's your favorite sword OC?
And so Caliburn didn't have...
Mine's Sir Leon's sword.
Caliburn didn't have an origin
its
originally.
Steve. Yeah.
The Sword in the Stone thing came way later.
Yeah.
And that was also taken from another piece of someone else's mythology.
Of course it was.
Go figure. And then it gets confusing because then there was also the Lady in the Lake origin. So some people were just like, oh yeah, the Sword of Selection was a magic sword that could only kill bad people. And one time Arthur got pissed with a good guy, tried hitting him with it and broke it. So he had to go get another weapon of legacy.
Yeah.
From Lancelot's adopted mom, the Lady of the Lake. Yeah, by the way, Lancelot gained all of his fighting skills from actual fairy Lady of the Lake.
I like versions where Lancelot's just French.
Yeah, I do too. But with the
Lancelot... I mean, it explains everything about Lancelot.
But with
it's just French.
With the Lancelot...
Oh, he's trying to bang Arthur's wife? Man, it's just French.
The Lancelot thing, though, was nice, though, because it let them rework the story so they could excise that Roman invasion part, because anyone who knew any history knew that made no sense.
Yeah, of course.
So
unless, what if King Arthur was a Roman who tried to invade Great Britain, and then he really wanted to bang Blue Keira Knightley?
You know, I still don't hate that movie. That's so weird. And this is my favorite part to tie up this whole OCs versus OCs thing.
Yeah.
So obviously not everyone was into this whole courtly love thing. And the reaction to maybe Lancelot banging the king's wife behind his back wasn't such a good thing.
You think?
This is where the Vulgate cycle and things like La Morte d'Arthur turned it instead of into something that made Lancelot noble, it turned it into a character failure that brings about the moral failure of all of Camelot. And so, yeah, I know, it's nuts. So another...
You following this, Ken?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Another OC had to come in because Gawain, who was previously the best knight, just wasn't enough. We needed another OC who wasn't just a better fighter than Lancelot, more loyal than Gawain, and more capable of finishing his own story than Percival. We needed Galahad.
Galahad. So, aren't you glad he's Galahad?
So Galahad is Lancelot's son, who is also conceived through questionable means.
So here's the thing: like, what's amazing is that so many people are so many people's kids. Gawain's the nephew, but they're always like, first off, if these guys are old enough to be knights, how old's fucking Arthur?
Excellent question.
Think about this, if Galahad and Gawain are fighting at the same time as Lancelot and Arthur, then, like, Lancelot is old as crap and has been, by the way, lusting after Guinevere this whole time.
Wait, I think I have an answer for you. I do think I have an answer for you because, according to Geoffrey, Arthur reigned for 35 years. He was 15 when he took the crown, meaning he was 50 at the Battle of Camlann.
That is...
There is your...
I mean, I guess that... That math kind of, like... And you could kind of work that out, but it's... Like, you'll notice that all future adaptations kind of ditch some of this lineage crap.
When they don't, they come up with stuff like the Fate anime. Their explanation is that Excalibur actually slows the aging process.
Oh, of course it does.
Which also gives a convenient excuse for why the Arthur in that series was biologically female, is that by making it public knowledge that the magic sword slowed the aging process, everyone just looks at Arturia and is like, oh yeah, that's just a really young man face, and the voice never cracked. I believe that.
Wait, in the Fate series, King Arthur's a woman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arthur and...
I know nothing about Fate other than the fact that you guys keep talking about...
Arthur and Mordred are both women. Or biologically women. Mordred, it's complicated.
Mordred, it's complicated. First off... That's a button.
That's always...
That's just Mordred, :, it's complicated.
Mordred, it's complicated describes all of Mordred.
That's every version of Mordred. There is no simple version of Mordred, be he a tiny little baby druid, or...
A Damien Omen druid, be honest with me.
Yeah, Damien Omen. Come on, witchcraft. It's...
But yeah, Mordred's whole thing... Poor Mordred is an interesting character because he's also a character from earlier Welsh mythology.
Oh, of course he is.
Where it gets weird is that there actually was an old Welsh phrase that was like having the... where comparing someone to Mordred was a compliment.
Yeah.
That, like, pre-Geoffrey of Monmouth, comparing someone to Mordred was like a compliment, and then suddenly he got shafted.
Of course.
And he changes, like, in the early stuff, he's usually just a conniving, like, really ambitious dude. And then in later versions, they try to give him more dimension, but it's usually at the cost of making his mother figures evil. Like, extremely evil. So either Morgause or Morgana, or sometimes they're the same person, depending on who's trying to streamline the mythology, raise him to destroy Arthur. And then in some versions, in the more recent versions of the story... He is literally Arthur's bastard son.
Okay.
And there's all sorts of incest involved, depending.
Like in the Mists of Avalon. Yay. That was an interesting read.
It's a creepy, with the author's jerk.
Mary Stewart, like, wrote, like, the definitive, the Wicked Day in her book, that's like the definitive relatable Mordred story where they tried to make him into a likable character. And there's a lot of tragedy to the character. It's just the sad thing is usually it comes at the cost of making the mother figures in his life completely evil. Which, if you haven't noticed, women get terrible parts in this story. I shouldn't laugh, but it's true. Well, Galahad, was, I don't even know if I want to go into where Galahad came from, because It's all sorts of awful. But like, but when you got Galahad, Galahad's, and like I said, he's the anti-Lancelot, because he's Lancelot's actual heir, but he is better than Lancelot because he doesn't bang people's wives behind their back.
Yeah, and of course.
The OC writer who wrote Galahad was so into that, that Galahad literally finds the Holy Grail and is taken up to heaven.
Well, that's what you get.
So that he can't be in the rest of the story. Incidentally, like, when Lancelot tries to touch the Holy Grail, it shoots a laser at him and throws
him out of the room. Specifically a laser?
It doesn't call it a laser, but a beam of light throws
him out
of the room.
Okay, I just want to be clear.
And it's interesting.
Also, how the heck did the Holy Grail end up in this mess?
Oh, well, there's another fun one of Christianization. So yeah. the other thing that goes on with these Arthur stories is most of these are at least derived from pre-Christian stories, and then a heavy layer of Christianity got slathered over it, but a lot of the pagan elements still remained. So instead of like plastering over it, it just kind of blends together.
Yeah.
The Grail in the Parzival story where it first shows up is just a magic cup. There's no Jesus connection at all. The Galahad story is what added the
Galahad
Jesus
story is
stuff.
Made of Jesus.
Basically, yeah.
It's a flesh-colored cup.
Oh, God.
Made of Jesus.
No! No!
You're literally drinking from Jesus' cup hands.
This is my body. This is my blood.
I do like how T.H. White wrote Galahad in his Once and Future King cycle, though. Because, like, he's so perfect that the other knights don't trust him.
Yeah.
Like, he's so good that everyone's fed up with him. He actually inspires Mordred and Agravain to be like, this crap has got to stop. I'm so sick of this guy. It's... So, what I'm getting...
We should get to a point somewhere.
What I'm getting at here is that there is... The fun thing about King Arthur is that you can keep reinterpreting it, and there really is no one definitive version of this legend.
One virgin? Galahad.
That's
Galahad.
There's no definitive version of the story, and in some ways, I think I like it that way. I like seeing fandom build upon it. I like seeing it reinterpreted. Someone recently acquired a friend of ours from the show. A friend of the show actually gave me a copy of the DC comic Camelot 3000. And
yeah, core fan, yeah.
I can't wait to read it. It looks crazy. Star Wars is a reinterpretation of King Arthur. It's great.
Optimus Prime is a reinterpretation of Arthur.
Okay, that one... Actually, well, he does have a sword weapon of legacy in several of the other continuities, so...
And then he, you know, goes to rest at that one, and then he comes back.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, really, Arthur's a Christ figure.
Yeah. I mean, you got that King of the Mountain thing going on where, you know, you didn't technically
not
see
to be confused with the Hall of the Mountain King.
No, not to be but it's what we... It's how we refer to...
Or should we?
Well, it's how we talk about heroes like Finn McCool and King Arthur who were these great leaders who will someday come back in their country's darkest hour. And that's actually what inspired T.H. White to write his version of the Arthur story was World War II, was that he felt that Arthur needed to come back. It's not a coincidence that in T.H. White's Arthur, Agravain actually suggests to Mordred that they blame all of Camelot's problems on the Jews. I mean, T.H. White was not subtle in his allegories about who are the bad guys.
That's just crappy writing. That's just bad writing.
You just called Candle in the Wind a poorly written book.
You're right, I did.
And I'm offended on
you
a
agree.
Level.
You agree. You agree. Somewhere deep
I
in
said,
your... Search your heart. You know it to be true.
Kylo Ren is Mordred.
Of course he is.
Just throwing that out there.
Yes. Yeah.
Luke Skywalker is Arthur. He got his weapon of legacy from his terrible father. He brought peace to the galaxy.
And then he lost it and forged a new one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same character.
Yeah.
So
makes sense.
So yeah, I
who's Ray?
Oh, Thomas Mallory.
I like the way you have an answer for that, because
At the end of it's because Last Jedi is the end of Candle in the Wind. Luke Arthur is at wit's end. His legacy has been destroyed.
So where does Princess Diana come into this?
The book had that name first.
I know. Luke, I'm sorry.
Luke. That's the thing.
I always go for the joke.
Luke is at wit's end. He is his legacy is destroyed.
Luke is at wit's end.
His legacy has been destroyed, and he's trying to recover it, and the only way he can do it is a no-win battle against his evil nephew. He entrusts his story, though, and that legend to the next generation, to a young man named, Arthur entrusted his legend to a young man named Tom, who is Thomas Mallory, Sir Thomas Mallory, so someone who will one day become a knight, just as Luke has entrusted his legacy to young Rey, who will one day become a Jedi Knight. Rey is Thomas Mallory. Deal with it, Internet!
Alright, so, as we've established, that's as legitimate an interpretation of Arthur as anything, because all Arthur is layering copies of people's fanfic about two people who just might have, like, there's a 20% chance we're real having certain names,
And being at the same battle.
And people just writing constant fanfic about it and compiling on the fanon. It's pure fanon.
There is
no Arthur canon. It is nothing but fanon. And so as you sit there writing your Steven Universe fanfic about your crystal gem, a blamethyst who's an amethyst who likes to say blam a lot, let it be known...
that you're no different from Chrétien du Trois.
Yes. So if you have any fan art you'd like to show us of Chrétien du Trois, Blamethyst, or Lancelot, or all three of them riding a dinosaur.
Sure.
Voiced by John Hurt, send that, attach it in an email to tips@nerdandtie.com, and we will put that on the website.
Sean Connery was in a good King Arthur movie, too. It was Dragonheart. It's only tangentially, because everyone thinks Arthur's the best, and so the movie takes place at Avalon, but it's so much better to have Sean Connery as a dragon than Connery.
Here's the thing. The guy who played King Arthur in Once Upon a Time played King Arthur in Transformers 5. So, does that mean the Transformers 5 is canon to Once Upon a Time? And secondly, does that mean the Transformers 5, since Once Upon a Time had a version of Frozen, that Optimus Prime and Elsa could one day ride a Dinobot together with Chrétien du Trois and Blamethyst? If you would like to draw fan art of that... while joined by John Hurt, go send your art to tips@nerdandtie.com and we'll feature it on the website.
Oh my god. I don't know what just happened, but I feel like someone might have learned something, maybe.
The beautiful nugget in all of this is that, like, fanfic writers nowadays get so much schlock for, like, not being valid writers, but...
This is the problem with our copyright system is that, you know, honestly, like, every story should be able to layer like this.
Uh-huh.
This is, like, I mean, yeah, it's copyright is important, but it shouldn't keep being extended. It's things need to enter the public domain. So one day, your Superman Steven Universe crossover can become some next generation's canon for the character. Like, we should be able to do this layered, like, storytelling throughout human history has been about mashups and crossovers and your dumb OCs. That's right. Your dumb OCs are just as legitimate as Lancelot.
Yeah.
Think about that. One of the biggest characters in Western folklore is your characters, your weird OC who's like Sonic, but he's orange. Like, that is just as legitimate as Lancelot, and you should feel proud and do not take any shame in your fanfic. That is the lesson.
Uh-huh.
That is the lesson.
Yeah.
Like, we just sat you through a half-hour-long lecture about the history of the Arthur mythos just to let you know purely just to let you know that your OCs are just as legitimate as
Lancelot,
or
Parzival,
and your crossover fic is just as legitimate as Merlin and Arthur being in the same story.
Uh-huh.
All right. So, and as you write Merlin fanfic, you have just as much legitimacy as Jeffy Mon Mon. If not more so at this point, because you're at least basing it off of something that you can verify and happened somewhere, even if it's just in another story.
Hey, where did Stonehenge come from? Merlin did it.
Merlin did it.
Quote, Jeffrey and Mon Mon
is
probably...
I'm sorry, I watched Hercules, and it was an evil version of the Druids. But not some, but after we offended all the people, Neo-Pagans, we created some good druids, too.
Oh, good.
That was so dumb. Oh, God.
I believe...
Well, like, because then they went and found out that Neo-Pagans really liked a lot of Hercules and Xena and offended all of them. And they were like, oh, crap. So Raimi and Tapert went and, like, dialed it back and, like, said, no, these are, like, some evil guys who happen to also be in the British Isles. Here are some good druids for you. And please keep watching our show. Neo-Pagans, you're a bunch of... I'm sure Kevin Sorbo didn't care. Kevin Sorbo is a monkey-fighting piece of Baroque garbage.
Agreed. And he might be Baroque garbage, too. Anyway, we should look at what's in the mailbag.
When's God's Not Dead 4 happening? All right. So we gotta hit the mailbag. So who wants to take Sean's letter here?
I can do it.
Remember to skip the paragraph.
I will. All right, so, from our good buddy Sean Orange, channel not as awesome as it never was. Oh, dang.
Dang, nabbit.
Hello, nerds who may or may not be wearing ties. Without video proof, how can we know?
When we were on video, I was the only one ever wearing a tie.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a slight small correction to Trey's memory of the open call to the incident he talked about in episode 120. I actually tried to apply to Geek and Sundry.
Yeah, I misremembered.
And I did it just as myself instead of Famicom Dojo for a couple of reasons. All right.
Powit.tv?
Yep, Powit.tv was in the midst of dissolving at the time, but I was in a bit of denial, and still convinced some form of it could be salvaged. So, your discussion of what you thought Channel Awesome should have done is what I was in the midst of trying to get Powit to do before the bottom fell out. No one was visiting the website anymore, and views of most of the creators were falling off precipitously. Only Famicom Dojo was still in an upward trajectory, which was frustrating given the heavy cross-promotion we had started instead lamenting the year before. I bet both of these factors were the case with other networks as well, making ideas like shared ownership, shared assets, and shared workload seem daunting or just a bad idea in general. So I couldn't speak for Vink either because he lives in another country on the other side of the planet with a day job more demanding than mine, so I went to Geek and Sundry as just me. And I admit, it wasn't my best work. It didn't surprise me it didn't get their viewers.
And we're going to skip a paragraph where he talks about joining Channel Awesome, because there were things he did not know when he wrote this that he now knows about, and I don't think he would want to say that again.
Mm-hmm. The biggest trick is that almost all these networks have creators of differing skill levels, interests, at availability, and most vexingly, geographic decentralization. It's hard enough to get this to work when everyone is in the same office every day. How do you do it when everyone lives in different states and countries? It seems lately that networks are the thing that creators grow beyond. But I still believe in what Powit could have been, and what other decentralized networks could still be. The thing I know for sure is that I never want to try to be involved with running a network and the content ever again. Not only do I know I don't have the time any longer, but it seems to have felled creators that we're otherwise respected, Sean.
Yeah, so it's I want to talk about this. I think that so an interesting thing is actually in many ways that we're trying to do with Nerd and Tie is lightly a network. Because Nick produces his content independently, but we aggregate his videos.
By myself.
And he does that, but we aggregate that content on Nerd and Tie.
I should really just link nickizumi.com directly to the tab on the Nerd and Tie site.
Yeah. But, like, it's, Nick's, but Nick's owns his own stuff. He, you know, does that. Obviously, Nerd and Tie is a little different than Channel Awesome because this podcast right here, the fundamental thing that founded the site, is hosted directly on the site. This isn't, there are times where we've posted it to YouTube, most of the episodes. We aren't doing it anymore right now, but most of the episodes are actually on YouTube. But they were on my personal YouTube account because it was a partner account, and it's not anymore. which is why they're here. But so this is a little different than the fact that this is original content being hosted on our stuff. And if we get, you know, again, streaming, or if we roll out more podcasts, which there have been conversations about maybe rolling out other podcasts, but the pieces need to align before that happens, is Nerd and Tie is actually, in many ways, a network. Besides, you know, it's...
And I can see that. It's, I don't know,
We're just a small network with only three people.
And I don't... The thing is, though, like Sean also mentioned, it seems like networks are a thing. A lot of people have grown beyond it. I think part of that is just that what made Channel Awesome so enticing to begin with was that it was stuff you couldn't get on YouTube.
Yeah.
Because there were a bunch of people who looked like they were a bunch of friends producing things together. And to be real, that guy with the glasses.com, while it was, I stand by that it was a really poorly organized site.
Yeah.
It was way easier to navigate than Blip, which
was hosting. Yeah, that's the thing, because they were hosting on Blip, because YouTube's copyright, the off week episode where I review Pacific Rim 2, that got copyright claimed by Universal because of what I used in Fair Use, I believe, because it's about commentary over the movie, and the clips are in regard to the commentary that I'm doing at those moments. But Universal copyright claimed it. Now, I don't have a partner channel anymore, so I couldn't make any revenue off of that video to start with. So it doesn't really... that copyright claim doesn't affect me, but if I was a big enough channel to still earn revenue on YouTube, that would have taken money out of my pocket. And actually, that's why you'll see that there's been a little less YouTube activity from me than what originally was planned, because there's... We can monetize the podcast. The website is monetized. The nerdandtie.com doesn't make a lot of money, but it's a positive revenue.
Right.
I don't know. I think that Channel Awesome was important during the Blip era because there was the only way to really find reviewers doing that stuff. Now that they've all been forced to move back to YouTube, it's kind of made it irrelevant. But they could have found relevancy if they had been better managed.
I agree. I think there was I think the end of Blip did kind of force creators, and I guess we can't get into this too much, but it did force people to kind of take better looks at copyright and fair use.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what Channel Awesome was doing during the Blip era was not by any stretch of the imagination fair use.
Yeah.
It was fair use in the loosest, most
most liberal sense of the term.
I am sincerely convinced that Doug Walker believes that fair use is I can do what I want. Yeah. I really get that impression.
That seems to be his attitude about everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It's a little mean. But
so it's. I think we kind of. That's much we can respond to Sean's thing. Again, you want to take Cassie's letter?
Yeah.
Because I can't.
Well, Cassie writes. So, had my mind blown during this last podcast.
What's the subject? Subject. Don't forget the subject.
Crazy an adult? So, I had my mind blown during the last podcast when it was announced Trey was an adult.
Hey. That's just mean, dude. 37. I'm off the bald spot on the back of my head. Like, if I was a child with a bald spot like this, you'd call a doctor.
Or you were Merlin.
Where I was.
Yeah, we'd send you to a monastery.
I'd be really scared. It'd be a pretty short life because, you know.
Anyway.
As far as long-running media, I tend to be with Trey in that I can sit through a lot, but I will drop a series if they deny a character a well-earned death. Good example. Once Upon a Time. I put up with a bloody Frozen insert season, but the reason I...
Oh, let it go.
The reason I quit watching was the fact that Hook had a good death. He had completed a fantastic character arc, and he had died heroically. To literally Deus Ex Machina him back to life infuriates me.
That drives me nuts, too. I hate when a good death is undone. That just...
Right? They finish up the character arc, and then decide to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of why I'm not a huge fan of, like,
but,
all
but that season,
rest
but the
rest of the
Caribbean
of
Hook,
movies.
The resurrection of Hook gave us shipping Hades with the Wicked Witch of the West, and they gave her the birth date of April 15th, which meant that I got to create the shipping name of Death and Taxes.
Hachi Machi, Disney, it sure is nice that you're able to use all these... characters who were in public domain created by other people. Too bad you keep extending. This goes back to the copyright thing.
You knew it. Finish the letter.
Thank you for this show. Also, I have no idea what a Fullbringer is.
No one knows what a Fullbringer is. This is actually... I want to be clear. A Fullbringer isn't a thing. That's the only thing that makes sense to me now. That there is no such thing as a Fullbringer in any work of fiction. It is not a thing. It's Jeffy Monmon wouldn't have written about a Fullbringer.
Well, you know
he
what?
Not have written about a Fullbringer because their powers don't come from the Jesus. That's just a fact.
Well, that could be ROC.
Yes! Sir Fullbringer!
Sir Fullbringer!
if you can tell us what the hell a Fullbringer is, go to nerdentai.com/contact. Click on the form. Call, or dial 414-375-0480 if you tell us if we're pronouncing Fullbringer wrong. And, or if you've got fan art of Sir Fullbringer, Jeffrey of Monmouth, calling himself Jeffy Monmon, Blamathist, and, what's that French guy's name?
Chrétien de Troyes.
Chrétien de Troyes, riding a dinosaur voiced by John Hurt. Go to email us at tips@nerdandtie.com.
Just let us know.
We need to see this. We need to grok the... And Optimus Prime. The dinosaur's riding Optimus Prime.
Wait, what?
Why don't they just all ride Grimlock?
Because Optimus Prime is then riding Grimlock.
Okay,
so stat glare. So you got Grimlock at the bottom, ridden by Optimus Prime, ridden by a dinosaur voiced by John Hurt.
Okay.
Ridden by Chrétien de Troyes, Jeffy Monmon, Blamathist...
And our new OC.
Sir Fullbringer. I want to see this fan art. This has to... I have a mighty need. Oh, dear Lord. I need to do the Vomit Head Steve challenge. I found a quote from the book. So
excellent.
Also, Marion Zimmer Bradley was gross. Don't read her Wikipedia page.
I'm familiar.
Oh.
I am familiar.
I'm glad I never liked The Mists of Avalon.
Actually, I haven't read that one yet, but...
It's interesting.
She likes to equate a lot of things to, like, the old religion. It's all part of the Big White Wicca myth, witch cult of Europe that didn't exist ever.
Yep.
But certain crappy anthropologists liked to, for a while, promote.
Right.
It'll make you think about deer hunting differently.
Don't have sex with deer. Anyways, freaking it. Bringing us to the Hall of Awesome is the Vomit Head Steve Challenge is of course the part of the episode where I read something from a book and the challenge to you, the listeners, to guess what book it's from. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. Benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. One, you get your name listed on the website. Two, we say your name aloud in the episode. And three, we give you a high five if you ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
High fives must be requested. They are not given without consent or request. All right, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Follow.
Fullbringer Sparrow.
Arcanine, Zero, Renin, Sandy, Cheese McCammer, Krista, Slytherity, Shames to Talk with the Random Ramblings, Man, Corfin, Capito, Criscan, Blizzard, Paper Godzilla, Cavsy, Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shizu, and Sakura Sunset. I didn't take a breath at the beginning, so I had to take a breath in the middle, and it just seems disappointing. Now, I'm going to pull up your line of dialogue for this episode is, if per capita was a problem, decapita could be arranged. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdentai.com/contact, click on the formy form, write in your wordy words, and tell us. Or go to that form and tell us if you have anything else you want to say to us. Anything you dream, hope for, wish. If what you would fan art of us sitting in a Super 8 doing this episode.
Tell me about your OCs.
Tell us about your OCs. Tell us about your OCs.
And we'll do a share for share. If you tell us about one of your OCs, we'll tell you about one of ours.
That's true.
That's right. Or if you want to leave a voicemail, if you call 414-375-0480, we'll play that audio here on the show for the world to hear unless we decide not to because of whatever reason. Because sometimes things are too long or awkward or weird. Alright. So, and also we have an announcement. Last episode we mentioned that we're going to be doing a live show at No Brand Con. I gave the incorrect time in that episode.
Oh no.
In fact, it is still on Friday, May 4th, but we're actually at 10 p.m. And that is Nerd and Tie Live. And the topic for that episode is going to be convention horror stories. And it's going to be a ton of fun. I know it's the middle of the night, but we got the full hour and a half for the show booked. So this will not be a truncated episode, and if you want to contribute to the episode, we might let you if we have enough time. If our stories go on too long, then we won't. And, you'll just have to sit through our very entertaining stories. So I guess there's not really a lose situation there. Should we wrap up the show, guys?
Let's wrap this up.
I'm one of your hosts, Benjamin.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I am the once and future Nick Izumi.
All right, remember to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or anything that can take an RSS feed, and you can always find that at nerdandtie.com. You can find our articles that we write about in-depth coverage, of course, at nerdandtie.com. So if you're just reading this on a pod feeder, then, you know, check the website every once in a while. We write some fun stories. Also, you can support the show financially, besides sponsoring episodes, which you can find information on nerdandtie.com for that. You can say nerdandtie.com a lot. You can also contribute to our legal fund. We really need the help right now. Go to gofundme.com/nerdandtie. We've got some big challenges ahead of us for that. And then if you'd like to support us individually, Nick has a Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/NickIzumi. I have a Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/TRAEGORN.
And hit up my Etsy store at Ocelot Dude Designs.
Or if you want to throw some money at, again, she also has a coffee link at coffee/Genjamin. It's like Benjamin, but with again. Again. I always say that. And remember, you should subscribe to us on social media, at Nerd and Tie on Twitter, /Nerd and Tie on Facebook, and nerdandtie.tumblr.com for all the latest crap that we put out into the ether and delight your ears with, and sound the alarm.
Keep on spocking in the free world.
Dear Lord, I've got to actually, get up now to stop. So, trying to hold in a fart.